right, we have a two-hour super session to do today. I will go ahead. Well, let's see. I guess.
Do you want me to scribe?
Yeah, if you don't mind. Sorry, I got confused between another telecom. I thought I was scribing today. Thank you. All right, so there are a couple of additions to the agenda that we have. Nicholas, you mentioned two things, which is support for controlled probing of unlinked objects and support for language in term definitions. And I think that Marcus had a few questions as well relating to consistency in how we use set and value in the body of JSON LD documents. Other than that, on the agenda today, we have references to lists, removing the initial context from the API spec, IRI normalization, IRI conflicts when compacting and expanding, and specifying the active context for compaction. We should probably order these and get the syntax issues dealt with first, and then go on to things like the initial context and specifying the context for stuff like compaction. Are there any other changes or modifications to the agenda? Anything else we should discuss today?
Just a question. I noticed I wasn't able to add labels to GitHub. I don't think I might not be a member of the JSON LD organization. Possible.
Let me check really quickly. He should be, but if not,
or I was to try to see where I.
No, you're not. I'll add you.
All right. Great.
Okay, you're added.
Thank you.
No problem. Okay, anything else? Any other updates or changes to the agenda before we get started? Should we go ahead and start with Marcus's issues, then Nicholas's, since they all have to do with the syntax, and then start with the agenda?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me try and get a clarification of semi expansion. So the first topic up is clarification of set and expansion. The email that Marcus sent out is here, I think. Marcus, what did you just put into our, That what Marcus just put in is the original one there. Okay, so Marcus, would you like to kind of take us through this one?
Sure. So, there were a couple of things. First of all, there was how AdSet is really supposed to work. So if we also allowed that shorthand syntax, as we do with AdList, so that you have an array which, so that you have an object whose only member, whose only property is at set, and then you have the array with all the values, just as at least if we allow that or not. I argued for allowing it, and Manu agreed with that, to keep the symmetry with lists, at least.
Could you reference specific example or type something in?
If you open that link there, the first example, that's at set.
So my thought about this was if we wanted to start adding more types of containers, then we basically have to add more behavior to the understanding those keywords within the body, which we wouldn't need to do necessarily otherwise. It could be much more limited impact.
So your argument is against doing that and using container, colon, and then the keyword instead, Greg?
Well, we'd use container, colon, within the context. I'm not a fan of using container, colon, within the body, but I can see a good argument for doing that. But to, I think is one thing adding a keyword to the key position, and there's another to the value position. And if we had four different types of containers, we'd have different tokens for each of them. But if we were then to turn around and use those as keys, that just seems like it's a bigger impact on the processor. By the way, someone's got some feedback issues going on.
I'm not hearing the feedback.
I'm not hearing the feedback either.
Then it must be on my side.
Okay, so Greg, just to clarify, the key thing that you're concerned about is the impact on the complexity of the processor, and your...
It's really a scalability issue if we keep adding different types of containers. There are some more container types that we could consider. If we do that, then we have to add a keyword for each of those things, which is certainly needed in the value position to be able to identify them. But it's having them in the key position. You know, I'm just speculating. I don't have a strong position that it's going to be too much complexity for the processor to deal with it in that position. Mm-hmm. But that's something we should consider before we sort of blanket decide on going in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So would that basically also mean that we should remove at least from that like special keyword construct thing?
If we were to move to putting container list within the same element, then I suppose it would. So what does the syntax look like? You've got, let's see, I'm trying to find the issue here. Yeah, so if we went to value being an array and then container list versus list with the value of the list key being an array, that would be more consistent with what I just said, yes. But you know, it's just a thought I put out there. So I'd certainly like to hear other people's input about that.
So I guess the main argument I think, Greg, that you're making is we should be concerned about complexity, and we should also be consistent. And one of the things that's going to impact both of those is whether or not we add other container types in the future.
Right.
Okay. Nicholas, thoughts?
I think that I agree with Greg, although by implication that would mean that I think it's a good idea for value with the list, which I didn't initially when I read the thread, so I'm a bit confounded by my own conclusion. But I think that set especially in... This is about allowing it this in general, right? Because during expansion, you would never use set explicitly because that's implied. Am I correct?
I believe so.
You would probably for other containers.
Yeah, for other containers, that's a different issue.
So set is the only special case then in the end.
Yeah.
Probably we shouldn't have a special case for set then.
No. So the other way to look at this is to try and think about how authors are going to view this, right? So I think that processor complexity should be the last concern on our list.
Yeah.
But then again, processor complexity might be a good sign that the language is getting too complex because there are all these, you know, special cases that we're adding in. I think one of the decisions that we had made a couple of months ago was to try and be as explicit as possible when you're using a new type of JSON LD construct, right? So we said, you know, well, we need to have probably at container and then at set and then at list, because we want to be pretty specific about the different types of containers that are being used. Then again, one example of us going counter to that is at type, where we reduce the specificity from at type and at data type just, you know, down to at type because we thought it was going to be easier in authors. So I guess the question is, what do we think is going to be easier in authors? Is it going to be at value that has an array, and then we say container is a set and container is a list? Or is it going to be just at list and then something in the array, or at set and then something in the array? And right now I think I'm leaning towards the latter, which is at list and then an array of items, or at set and array of items. We could go either way. I think that's why this decision is going to be a difficult one, is that it seems like we could go either way, and it's kind of up in the air on how authors would, which one authors would feel is simpler. The other thing I guess we could add in here is that if authors have to do this, if the authors have to use expanded form for this, then we've got another issue, which is, why are they using expanded form for this, right? So that's very well could be one case.
I hope that it is.
That says having the at set nomenclature then seems a little odd, because it's implied. So it's really, at best, syntactic sugar.
Yeah.
And what would happen if you expanded? Would you remove at set when you did an expansion? Would we always have to expand a bare array into at set array in order to create something that was normalized for compaction?
Yeah, that seems like I'm afraid that expanded form is getting less and less useful for people, because we're adding all of these kind of JSON flourishes to the markup. Because then, you know, to use expanded form, then you really have to know how expanded form is kind of constructed, right? You know that you're not just going to delve into an array. You're going to have to delve into an object which has at set or at list, and then inside that is actually your data. So your accessor to access expanded form is not as straightforward as it used to be.
So I'm wondering whether, I think adding the at list was a concession to be able to describe something that is really intended to be done through coercion in the context. But yet we need a way to be able to represent it without that. So trying to say, okay, well, we added that, now let's use that as a normalized form for everything, is just going perhaps a little too far in making it consistent for set, which is really there for a completely different reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I really agree with that. Also, I wonder, the other kinds of containers we have considered, what are they? I mean, how are we laying the foundation for them to appear? I believe that some of them, at least the ones I've thought of, have to do with compaction and making JSON native forms, or, if you will, only used for compacted expressions.
Yeah, Greg, do you have an idea of what other containers that we'd probably end up adding in the future? I didn't think that there really were any.
I don't know that there's any that we would probably add. But there is wide dissatisfaction with RDF list as a representation form.
Mm-hmm.
And another one that we used before in connected media experience, for instance, is based upon the ordered list ontology.
Mm-hmm.
in which you use a layer of indirection of nodes to be able to define it, basically as a way of adding attributes to the length, so that I have an intermediate node between the container and the list item on which I can put attributes such as the order number, things like that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, and Dave Lane said there's also this kind of concept of a raw triple container. I guess you could also look at graph as another way, another type of container. I don't know. I think I'd be okay with us having a new keyword for every single type of container that we have, and using that as the encapsulating, as the key that, you know, encapsulates the value, the data. Because I think that at least the authors, it makes it clear exactly what type of container we're talking about. I think set is the only exception in that, and I think it's okay for us to kind of optimize that set away when we expand, because that is kind of the default. That's kind of the default collection type that you use in RDF if you're not using, you know, something that's ordered or a graph or any one of those other things. So I guess at least at this point I'm leaning much further towards using the keyword and then allowing an array to happen, and then keeping value really simple, like value is a single value. And then if you have something that's more than just a single value, then you have at set or at list or at graph or at intermediate list or at triples, and then we just add those that special processing to the JSON-LD processors. Additionally, I don't think it's a good. I don't think we should add those at this point. I don't think we have a compelling reason to, or will have a compelling reason to in the next couple of years. But that's just opinion on my part. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I think that sounds quite good to me. At the moment, we have set and list, and set is expanded away, so it dissolves on expansion, and that's good. Mm-hmm. And we have discussed other potential sort of macro containers, like IRI map or perhaps language map. Mm-hmm. And if they were introduced or by some extension introduced, they would also go away on expansion. So most of these forms would go away on expansion. The only special type, as we know of right now, is at list, and mm-hmm. perhaps the ordered list version Greg talked about. And I think that as long as we're clear that set should reasonably be allowed to use explicitly in certain special cases. For instance, I think Greg has mentioned a case where you coerce a term to a list, but then you have occurrences in your data where it's not a list for some reason of mixed data sources or something like that, and then you might have to introduce set explicitly to avoid that coercion. Mm-hmm. But in the general case, it will go away on expansion. It will reasonably never be used explicitly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but allowing it and using it as a key to be consistent with how we want to see lists and expanded form sounds quite reasonable.
Yeah. Marcus, were you on the queue?
Yeah. So, like that, just to summarize it, that means you, Nicholas, you and Greg, and I think Manu as well, are all... No, not Greg. Well, so what you're saying is that we allow at set in that form, but we optimize it away in the expanded form, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay with that too.
Banner construct.
Marcus, I didn't hear the last thing you said.
And we don't allow that add container construct with the expanded add container construct.
I think that's I certainly agree with that. I don't know if Nicholas and Greg agree.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay. Marcus, do you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Okay, so I guess the proposals then are in expanded form, at set with an array is allowed, at list with an array is allowed. In expanded form, and that's the first proposal. The second proposal is in expanded form, or in an expanded object, rather, at container is disallowed. At container with anything is disallowed or ignored. We should probably just ignore it. Does that capture what we just discussed?
And then thirdly, that at set, array is optimized away during expansion.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
And compaction?
In expansion and compaction, yes.
Okay.
Not necessarily in compaction. Right? So if the term is coerced to a list, then you might need to maintain it in compaction in the case when it was not a list it was referring to.
That's true. I guess I was talking specifically about the set. Set is always optimized away.
Now, for set, you might need to keep a set. It's a set colon array in the case that the term that you're using is coerced to a list.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay. Okay, so in an expanded JSON LD object, authors can use list and set to specify. Well, I guess in an expanded JSON LD object, authors can use at list and at set. Is that enough? So well, that?
Like we always normally talk about expanded form as the result of an API call. We never say an author writes expanded form.
True. Maybe in using list and set as keys is valid JSON LD.
Okay. Using list and set as keys in an expanded... Are we talking about expanded form, or are we specifically talking about... Well, yeah, I guess, yeah. In
general, don't we?
Like, yes. I mean, authors don't write expanded or compacted. Expanded or compacted are the result of applying some algorithms.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Using list and set as keys. Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is that there's a certain way that you can write a subset of this graph in the JSON LD document that is effectively an expanded JSON LD object. And that's a bit different than having a JSON LD object that has a bunch of properties and then has at set and at list in there.
I think we always call that the expanded form.
Yeah. Okay. Using list and
One thing is there are two different types of objects that we use. There are basically entity objects, which are, and then there's value objects, and a value object would be an example of an object that contains an at set in it. Mm-hmm. Or an at IRI. Well, actually, at IRI or at ID is a different one. But there are two different types of objects that might be actually useful to be able to have terms for them, so that we can describe that it's appropriate to use at list as a key within a value object, mm-hmm. but not within an entity object. If that's what we wanted to stick with.
Yeah, JSON LD values that are expressed in. Okay, so using list and set as keys in JSON LD values that are expressed in expanded form is allowed. Does that capture it?
Yeah.
Okay. Then lane plus one minus one plus zero. Okay, so that's one of them. The next proposal up was, what was the next proposal up?
During expansion, it gets optimized. Oh,
yes.
During expansion and compaction.
Yeah, there was another one, wasn't there?
There was another one.
Yeah, during expansion... I thought that was the third one. So during expansion and at times compaction, I guess, Greg, that set can be optimized away.
I would, if you can just say it during compaction, it can be optimized away. I think that's adequate.
Compaction set.
It's must, isn't it?
Maybe. Well, yeah, I guess it would be, it must be optimized away if it is not coerced to a list. Must be optimized. And then I guess in expanded form, it must be optimized away.
Yes.
During expansions, it must be optimized away.
Oh, and then the other one was the container list, container set is ignored. Actually, I don't know if we want to be explicit about what is ignored, but I think we wanted a resolution that it said that we were not going to do that.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so during compaction set expressed in expanded form, must be optimized away if it is not coerced to a list. During expansion set must be optimized away. Okay, there's that one. So that's resolved, and then I could have sworn we had something else.
Yeah, it was the use of container set or container list within a value object was not going to have any meaning.
Yeah, I thought we had something other than that, though. Then again, I'm a bit groggy, so I... It's probably my brain playing tricks on me. Okay, during the use of at container set and at container list is
container in general.
The use of at container is ignored when used in expanded form.
It's ignored within the body.
Okay, is ignored in the body of a JSON LE document. Okay. All right, so that's that one. And then, let's see, towards reading down Marcus's email. That's the other thing I was thinking of. The use of value as an array in array form is not allowed. Is that what we
right?
Do we agree on that? Value using at value is you're always specifying just a very simple value. It can never be an array.
It must be a string.
Well, let's see. I didn't necessarily want to say it has to be a string because we may have another decision later on, which is being consistent between strings and integers.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, I would vote against that one anyway. But
the consistency or be having.
Why don't we postpone that until we have addressed the other set, okay. And then if it might be then if that one is rejected, that we could make the statement that the range of value is always a string.
Okay. All right. So the next item up then is how we should be consistent, or if we should be consistent when we talk about how expansion happens, right? So if you have something, let me find.
Do you have a topic to paste in?
Let's see. Yeah, I guess the topic is expansion of string and integer and numbers.
Is there an issue?
No, there isn't. This is still in Marcus's email. This is the bottom part of Marcus's email. So the question is, the question is, what does this expand to? And what does this expand to? Okay, so the question is, what do these two things expand to? Right now, we're not consistent. So the string will just expand to a string, right? Thanks. Marcus, so the string thing in expanded form is still going to be a string. However, in expanded form, the term two, is going to be expanded into effectively
a string.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be a string with a data type, right? So the question is, we're certainly not being consistent, because if we were being consistent, we would expand the v1 string to a value of v1 with a type of XSD string. We don't do that. And I guess the argument for doing that is to be consistent across the board, so expanded form is consistent in how we expand. The argument is against is it doesn't buy the author anything to be consistent in that way, right? So in expanded form, really the author's not gaining anything by having that number 5 expanded into a string with an XSD integer. The same thing with a double value or what we're calling a double value. So if they have, 5.3e to the 6 in JSON LD, the expanded form for that would be the string, that string, and then XSD double as the expanded, kind of the expanded form. So I guess my initial thought is let's not expand these fundamental values in JSON LD. Let's leave it to the normalization algorithm to expand them into that form and just leave expanded form as is. So strings aren't expanded into, XSD string. Numbers aren't expanded into integer. And double values aren't expanded into the XSD double. Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I think the axiom or the principle that we should stick to expansion is doing the minimum necessary to be able to represent the data without a context. And I think my original thought was that integers not be expanded because it doesn't need to. It also requires that we introduce an XSD integer, which is more tightly binding us to RDF and XSD that is not otherwise strictly necessary just within the context of JSON-LD. So I'm agreeing with you that the primitive forms that can be expressed directly within JSON-LD should remain in that form during expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, compaction.
Okay. Marcus, Nicholas, Lane, thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree on that.
I think so, too.
Lane?
I don't know what to say.
Okay. All right, so I guess the proposal, yeah, the proposal is just that. So values that can be represented as JSON primitive data types are not modified on expansion or compaction. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Unless there is a type coercion. So if someone would specify it's an XSD double, then it could be converted to the...
Right. Okay, so at values that are...
Could we say that the range of at value is always a string, like I had suggested before?
Or it's always... I don't think that's what we're saying, right? Because if we say the range of at value is a string, then what happens when you have an at value of like the 5 number?
Well, what I should say is the range of the at value, the value of at value is always converted to a string during compaction and expansion.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
And I suppose in the case of, I just don't really care for the notion of using at value, say, the number 1, without a type. If that were to be done, though, would that imply that we would add a type of XSD integer?
I think in normalization we certainly would do that.
Is there a compelling reason to allow the use of anything other than a string for at value?
I can't think of one. Yeah, so maybe we should resolve that, that at value can only be a string. And it must have an it must have an associated data type, but that's not correct because it could also just have an associated language. So maybe we should just say, what Greg's saying. At value, the valid range of at value is a JSON string.
Yeah, that represents the lexical form of that literal.
lexical form of the literal. So that yes.
Can you use non-strings with that or not?
We're basically saying you can't.
You can't even like author it that way, or is it just that the algorithms would always output something different?
I think we're saying you can't even author it that way, that it would raise an exception or ignore.
I mean, is there a use case where you might want to just have it restricted via the type there? So you know, if you were using an integer or something and you wanted to have a type that said it was like a non-negative integer or something, I mean, is that a valid thing that you might want to do?
It is a valid use case. I guess the question is whether we want to support that use case or not.
Why would you use the integer in that case? If you're going to already provide its type, you may as well represent it as a string.
Well, it's in native JSON, though, it would just be an integer. It just happens to be you're using the mechanism of JSON-LE to restrict its type to something further than what JSON itself allows.
Yeah.
I suppose I see no harm in converting those values to string if they're given sort of manually as, well, integer or a boolean, perhaps.
Yeah, so I guess what we could say is that at value is coerced to a string in every case, and that supports the use case that Lane just brought up. And it just, you know, basically further reinforces what Greg is saying.
Yeah.
Marcus, is your minus one because of that?
Yeah, I don't see any reason to restrict it, but I agree that the output of the algorithm should be always a string then.
Okay, so let's try this proposal then. The value of the value key is always coerced to, well, let's not say coerced, is always transformed to a string by the JSON-LD processor. How's that? Okay, so that is resolved, although that was a sidebar kind of issue for what we were actually discussing. The other question is then are we consistent? I think what Greg and I are arguing for is that we should be consistent when people are expressing strings and integers when they're translated to basically expanded and compacted form, in that they continue to be expressed as JSON native types, with the added caveat that Marcus put in there, which is unless they're coerced to something else. Is that overview kind of where we are with the discussion?
I think so.
Yeah, for numbers, I think there's just the two. There's doubles and there's integers that are the native, where they can be expressed natively as the JSON types. Otherwise, it requires they will be transformed to a full value object with a value being a string with a lexical representation and then a type that indicates the actual type.
Yeah.
Okay. So go ahead. Sorry.
And that includes the edge case of a double with no fraction value, right? Like 5.0 and stuff like that, because mm-hmm. you can't see the difference.
Or even just 5 dot. I think that's allowed in JSON.
Yeah.
Although, you know, other already have notations have removed the dot without trailing digits form. This would always be a double. So if you wanted to express that, excuse me, as a decimal, you would need to use a data type.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so JSON numbers and strings are not modified. Well, let's see. Unless there is type coercion, unless there are type coercion rules in the context that apply, JSON numbers and strings are not native JSON numbers and strings are not modified in compacted or expanded form. I think that proposal. Does that capture the decision?
So just to be sure, if I would coerce it to access the integer, would that mean that it gets transformed in that expanded form or not?
So if you use an expanded form and your value is the string 5 and the type is XSD integer, you're saying does that get effectively optimized into a native JSON number?
Well, yeah, I meant it the other way around, but yeah. So I meant if you have a JSON-LD document with 5 as an integer in there and a type coercion of XSD integer, does that mean that it still remains a 5, or does it become a string, which is, well, 5, but as a string?
Yeah. So the proposal would basically say that it would be coerced to XSD integer.
Yeah, we want something else, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I think...
No, I think that would be fine for me. So you preserve that information then. Or maybe a type an example.
I think when we're talking about potentially optimizing a full representation down to a native representation, it can only happen if the lexical form of the value is compatible with the native type that's being represented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that would be an argument that anything that's an XSD integer would be transformed to a native JSON number. Anything that's an XSD double or a decimal would be transformed to a native JSON LD number.
Not decimal.
Because
we can't distinguish between decimal and double, so just
right.
Double.
Okay.
Yeah. And anything that is a double with the fraction value, well, a fraction other than zero.
Yeah. Okay. So then the proposal would be modified to say that. Unless there are type coercion rules in the context that apply, and as long as the type coercion rules are not XSD string for strings, XSD integer for integers, and XSD double for doubles, native JSON numbers and strings are not modified in compacted or expanded form. That's a mouthful.
Yeah. With the even with the addition, perhaps that the double must not be distinguishable from an integer. I don't know if you say has a fraction of non-zero.
Yeah. Let's see. Excluding. XSD integer, XSD string, and XSD double.
But isn't the intention of the author quite clear when he defines it in a context? So wouldn't it be safe to maintain that information in an expanded form instead of doing some magic which sometimes fails because there's maybe a double without a fraction?
Well, doubles are always this tricky thing, so I think we're going to have a very hard time with doubles any way we go with it. I think
yeah.
You do have a good point that if they specify it in the context, then we want to kind of be true to what their intent was. But then, you know, author intent is always a difficult thing because they may not have intended that to happen. They may have intended, you know, they may be using somebody else's context, and now all of a sudden they have all these XSD integers and XSD doubles when they didn't really mean for that to happen. I mean, the counter argument to that is that, well, in the context, if that's in the context, that's what the context is saying, that's what the intent is.
I think we need to stick to expansion being the minimum representation necessary to represent the graph without a context. So if you have a value which is an integer, it can be represented as an integer. If you have a value which is a double, if its lexical form, when represented as JSON, is unambiguously that of a double, then it can be represented in numerical form.
Yeah, but the problem in JSON is you don't have double and integers, you just have numbers. And if someone curses that to the XSD data types, he introduces those types. They are not there otherwise at all.
So if I have a... So I think it is unambiguous. So if I have something which does not have a fractional amount, then it can only be represented in native form if its data type is an integer. And if I have something which has a fractional amount, it can only be represented in native form if its data type is a double.
Which I don't think is true, Greg, because you can have 5-dot, which is a zero fraction, but
that can't be represented.
But you still have the problem if you then go further to normalization, then you lose the double there where you need it. Wouldn't you?
No, but you can always predict. I mean, given the rules in JSON-LD, if you see in JSON-LD data something, a number with no fractions, that explicitly means a number with the data type integer. If you see something with a fraction, that explicitly means something with the data type double. In any other case, you have to be explicit about the given data type. So you can always predict.
Fair enough, but why do we introduce the XSD types them at all?
In the cases where you need to provide, for instance, 5.0 and be explicit about that being a double.
But then we should just support that with values of strings and not doing some magic conversion from something to some normalized form.
Okay, so I think the two possibilities that are on the table right now are you're always consistent with the context and you do whatever the context tells you to do. Right? So if it says that type corresponds to XSD integer, it doesn't matter if it's a native type, you always expand in expanded form. The other approach is what Greg is proposing, which is you expanded form regardless of the context, is always the minimum necessary to express the JSON-LD document without a context. Right? Those are the only two options we have on the table right now, right?
Yeah, well, there is the third question, which is, do we have those automatic type automatic typing, or don't we support that?
I think we, well, I mean, right now we do, right? We support automatic typing in the JSON-LD, in the JSON-LD language.
Yeah.
Meaning it's supported for normalization. We do automatic typing because we have to. Well, actually, technically we don't have to, but we just do it for normalization because there are a whole bunch of other factors that come in with normalization, which is that you have to be able to represent it in Turtle and in 3 and all that other kind of stuff. Right? You don't have the native JSON numbers when you normalize, or you can't assume that you have native JSON numbers when you normalize. So that's why we expand to XSD integer and XSD double and those kinds of things. But I think that's separate from the discussion we're having right now, which is what's the minimum necessary do we do minimum necessary representation for expanded form, or do we do whatever is consistent with the context? To me, it seems like the least surprising thing is to do the minimum necessary. Do what Greg's proposing, which is a minimum necessary representation, because it's always the same. Expanded form always does the same thing to the data, right? I think it's less of a surprise to the author, because if they do something with expanded form, and then all of a sudden, for some reason, they have XSD integer showing up, then they have to go back and kind of debug their context and see why that happened, right? And if it did happen, then they have to go, oh, well, I really wanted expanded form to be the simplest thing, the minimum form necessary to represent this, and now I have to go in and modify my context and take out XSD integer coercions or XSD string coercions if they're in there. So from an author perspective, I think what Greg is proposing is simpler.
Yeah, I agree with that. But aren't we losing data then? Because we completely eliminate the context.
Well, but it's data that's recoverable, right? Because if we take that expanded object and normalize it, we're completely consistent. We know that something that's a number is an XSD integer. We know something that's a double is an XSD double. All that stuff is kind of baked into the JSON-LD syntax, in that we know what the conversion from a JSON type to a RDF, representation of that type is. Yeah. So I don't think we're losing any data. I agree with you. If we're losing data at some point, then there's a problem. But I don't think that, at least the way the spec's written right now, we lose any data by doing that.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so another question. If we have a normalized document, which normalization is not supposed to work just for JSON-LD, right?
That's correct. Yeah, we're currently updating this. We're updating the implementation, but normalization basically will generate. You'll put it through the normalization algorithm, and then what you end up generating is going to be an N triples document that's sorted lexicographically sorted. Also, any dnode that's in there has to be named in a deterministic fashion. So that's what the algorithm does. It names all the dnodes in a deterministic fashion. And once you have all the dnodes named, then you can do a lexicographical sort on them using N triples. So
okay.
It doesn't matter if your input document is RDF XML or JSON-LD or Turtle or any of those things. They always normalize it to the same kind of lexicographical representation.
So if you then normalize an RDF XML document which has a number 5, which is a double, if you normalize it, you have a 5 with double in there. Then you parse that with JSON-LD and normalize it again, and the normalization won't match anymore. because in that case it will be normalized to an integer.
No.
Why not?
If it was expressed in JSON LD as the number 5, it's an integer. If it was, if your context said that the type was a double, then because the JSON representation could not represent that type just using the number 5, it would need to be expressed in an expanded form. So by the time you go to convert to normalize, it's going to be an XSD double with a number 5. When you come back, unless your context, let's see, I guess that's a separate issue. But I think what we were saying is, as long as the lexical representation matches the JSON native representation unambiguously, it cannot automatically be represented using a native type. It has to use an explicit value and type.
Yeah, I agree with what Greg said. I believe that's what we have to do.
I don't completely understood that. So that would mean that 5, which is a double, gets translated into the expanded form in expansion.
Yes.
Right. Wait. No.
So we have 4.9 remains a number, but 5 becomes a string in expanded form.
The first answer I think that Greg gave was not correct. So if you have if you have 4.9, if you have 5 coming in, and that is an XSD double,
yeah,
right, then we would not, I don't believe we would coerce that into just 5. And I don't think that we could even convert it into 5.0 because there are round tripping issues with that if you were to process that in JSON. So if you take in JSON in JavaScript specifically, if you take 5.0 or 5. And then let's say 100 zeros and 1, all of those convert into the same number in JavaScript. So that's where we get round-tripping issues. So effectively, what we have to say is that if you have any of those things, right, where you could accidentally misrepresent the number, you absolutely must not translate it into a JSON native data type.
But
does that make sense?
No one will understand that why 5.9 will become a number and 5.01 will become a string.
5.01 wouldn't become a string, it would become a number as well, because it's a double.
Well, 5.0 will become a string, right?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be one of these corner cases where it's kind of annoying.
I think the other thing is if you have a term that coerces to double, and you use a native representation, which is not a double, then that value is not coerced. The coercion only happens for strings. So if I have term is the string 5 with value coercion to double, that would be a XSD double 5. If I had the number 5, then coercion does not apply. So I am then expressing the integer value 5.
Really?
I think that's what we need to do in order to stay consistent. Coercion only applies to string values and not to native values.
Well, that's at least not what we're doing right now.
Isn't it?
Yeah. No, I don't think that's what we're doing.
Automatic typing and stuff.
I think that's the only way to stay consistent.
Well, I think the easiest way is if we have a coercion in the context, we convert it to the expanded form regardless of what the type is. We we have that automatic typing with that IEEE conversion formula. And if it's not coerced, it remains a number.
Yeah, I'm starting to agree more with what Marcus is saying. This does open up a can of worms if we go the route with the simplest representation.
I mean, like, honestly, I don't expect that many people to coerce it to access the integer, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's really that it would happen that often. And if it happens, it's quite obvious where it came from, because you have that access the integer all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
What
finding why a 4.9 is different than a 5.0, that's really difficult to debug.
Well, 5.0 doesn't if you do this in JavaScript, you get 5.
Yeah, and that's exactly the problem. Because
but
you
that's
lose the information that's a double.
But we already know that. That's what we...
It's also just a limitation of JSON. This is true in any JSON document. So,
well, technically, it's not a limitation of JSON. It's an issue between JSON and the JavaScript processor. It's the environment, the computing environment you're using. This is the same issue with the round tripping stuff, and it's the reason we have that 1.6e formula, is because each environment that processes the JSON document treats it slightly differently, treats this mechanism slightly differently.
Well, the 1.6e is another thing that we
It's a separate issue we need to discuss. It needs to have more precision on it. But regardless, each operating environment that reads the JSON document in treats it differently. It's one of these corner cases of JSON. So I think at this point I agree with Marcus. I think that the only way that we can really be truly be consistent and not surprising is to do what's outlined in the context. And if there's nothing in the context, then we can make the decision for the developer. But if there's something in the context, we should certainly follow it. Greg, Nicholas, Lane, I don't know what you guys feel about that.
I can see the argument for doing that. I think there's still a question of what is meant by, what does coercion apply to? Does coercion apply to native values or just to strings?
I would apply to native types as well.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree, yeah. Whatever the value is there on the right-hand side, coercion applies to it. And effectively what coercion does is it translates that value to a string and then tacks on the data type to it.
Okay. So that right now that's numbers and booleans.
Yeah.
And nil. Although nil's not really allowed as a value.
No.
Yeah. Null is, but I don't think we...
Or null. Null, excuse me.
Yeah, and for null, we ignore it, so it's not an issue, I don't think. Okay. Trying to think of how to formulate this as a proposal. So what we're trying to say is, then the proposal is the same. It's unchanged. Unless there are type coercion rules in the context that apply, native JSON numbers and strings are not modified in compacted or expanded form.
Wait a second. I thought the purpose of this discussion was to convince me or everyone else that when expanding, we would always represent in the full form and not in the minimum necessary representation.
Yeah, but I think that proposal actually states what Marcus
what Marcus's proposal was, right? We had put that proposal down not thinking about what Marcus was thinking when he read that proposal. So basically it says that you don't modify JSON numbers and strings at all when you do expansion or compaction, right? Which is what I believe you wanted. But the only caveat to that is unless there is a type coercion rule that applies. If there is a type coercion rule that applies, then you apply the type coercion rule.
And the result is the full representation.
Yeah.
So if I use a value as the number 5 and I have a coercion, that term is coerced to XSD integer,
yeah,
then it will be represented as value 5 type XSD integer on
That's
expansion.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Yes. Yep. Yep, yep, yep. Okay. So that's the proposal. Unless there are type coercion rules in the context that apply, native JSON numbers and strings are not modified in compacted or expanded form. Okay. Does that address all of the issues that you raised, Marcus?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now on to Nicholas's issues that he's raised. First one up. Nicholas, do you have a – actually, does somebody want to – who's next up to describe, to relieve Greg of describing duty? I think Marcus, you might be up. Let me check.
For that last week, didn't I?
I'm sorry, Dave, you're up. Lane, mind scribing?
You know I can't stand this.
Sure. Well,
it's everyone's favorite thing.
Yes. Nicholas, do you have a
link? Yeah, I'm just.
Well,
thinking,
I have the links. Do you have a preference on which one to do first, issue 85 or issue 84?
I wonder if issue 85 might take a while. Well, no, 84 might take a while. I wonder if we should do something from the agenda prior to that, and because.
Okay.
We've been
85 would be quite quick, the result.
Yeah, 85 and then the agenda, and then if we have time, 84 would be my suggestion, because
okay,
it might take to get some issues done.
Okay. All right, issue 85, support language and term definitions. All right, so mind giving us a quick overview of this?
Yeah, I think that, well, we might already, some of us thought that this was how it worked. So the idea is that definitions of terms in the context should be able to be specified using the language key. Either you say that a term like title underscore SV has the specific language SV, that is Swedish. And also if you use language null, you mean a plain literal, even if you have language defined globally in the context as something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Yep. Any thoughts one way or the other on this? Marcus, Greg, Lane?
Seems like a good idea.
Yeah, I thought actually we support that already.
We also had a good comment yesterday from Osma on the issue, the last comment there.
Right, yeah. Okay. All right, so I guess the proposal then is support the use of language in term definitions to specify the associated language for the term. And the other thing I think we'd need to discuss is what takes precedence if both type and language are specified. Which one wins?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess we could wrap this in. So if both type and language are specified, do we say that type wins?
I think so.
Yes, but what if I coerced the language and then I used the value form, but I didn't specify a language in the value form? I think to be consistent with what we said about type, the language should not be automatically applied in that case either.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes.
Okay. Support the use of language in term. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
But, like, if you have a type of XSD string or something, would that mean that language wouldn't count then or wouldn't apply?
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, right now, if you use type XSD string in the context, language wouldn't apply.
Wait, say that again?
If you use context with a language defined globally, or well, if the context defines a language, but a specific term defines type to be string, then language will not apply to that term.
Right. Would language apply to that term if you didn't specify type or language?
Yes.
That's slightly different from what the value, you know, the expanded form thing is. So in expanded form, if you didn't specify type or language, you wouldn't have either one apply. Right.
No, not in expanded form, but because in expanded form, the language is folded into the literals.
Let me rephrase. So what I mean is that it seems like we have a minor inconsistency in how you specify something in the context and how you could specify it in the body of the JSON-LD document. So in the context, you can have at language at the top level and say it's SV, right? And then you could specify a term in there that says, oh, this is the IRI for the term. But you don't specify type or language information. And what you're saying is that for that term, the language information would be automatically SV. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in the body of the document, if you use the expanded, you know, JSON-LD object and you do add value and then a value, the term and then you use expanded form add value and you give it a value, then the language information isn't automatically applied to that value.
That's interesting.
So neither is the type.
Yeah.
The language value, the language, if the coercion only applies when the value is a string or, I guess, a native type. Does that mean if I had the number 1 and it was coerced to Svensk, it would be a string 1 with the language SV?
No.
I think language only applies to strings.
Right, so language coercion only applies to values which are strings.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Which are native strings, right? So not coerced strings.
No.
Right.
Okay, so hold on. Before we get too far down this discussion, let's get the first proposal resolved. So,
yeah. Because this, just to clarify, the discussion we just had, that's about how language works now, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're now we're proposing this.
Yeah.
Specific.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's do that first. Thanks, though.
Support the use of language and term definitions to specify the associated language for the term if both type and language are specified.
Language is ignored.
Yeah. Ignored. Okay, so that's resolved. Now, I guess the topic is how is language applied when used in the language applied. So the current proposal is. Yeah, I guess if there's language supplied at the top level of a context, then it applies to all strings. This is just one of the proposals. If a language is supplied in the top level of the context, it applies to all strings in the JSON-LD document. The question is, how do you make sure that a certain string does not specify the language? And I guess in that case, you could use at null in the term definition, language at language null in the term definition. Is that right?
Yeah. Or a data type coercion.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Any objections to that?
No, sounds good.
Okay. If language is specified at the top level, of a context, then it applies to all strings, native strings in the JSON LD body. The language can be overridden in term definitions by specifying a different at language value, including at language null, or by specifying the type or the term. How does that look? So if language is specified at the top level of a context, then it applies to all native strings in the JSON-LD body. The at language can be overridden in term definitions by specifying a different language value, including at language null, or by specifying a type for the term.
The all native strings, maybe we should clarify, that would be otherwise interpreted as plain literals.
Okay, if language is specified, then it applies to all native strings that would be interpreted as plain literals in the JSON-LD body. The language can be overridden in term definitions by such a thing. Yeah.
One area where we're going to perhaps have to revisit when we, presuming we get into the RDF working group, is the change of the meaning of XSD string to be basically equivalent to plain literal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we can. We'll deal with that when we're in the RDF working group, I guess.
Yeah. This addition, being able to use language null, actually makes it possible to adhere to the RDF 1.0 definition where you differ between XSD string and the plain literal. For better or worse, I mean, we in the future we want to, but hitherto it's been impossible to do. So for some definition of good, this is good.
Yeah, once we start getting into these types of corner cases, it's always, I think it's always a difficult decision because they're good arguments either way.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's look at getting into the agenda. Okay, so issue 75, references to lists. This is something that I believe Marcus raised. Marcus, would you like to take us through this?
Yeah, I think that takes, quite some time to resolve. But yeah, let me try. So the thing is that in a lot of REST APIs, you normally reference lists or sets, which are then represented at a different IRI. And currently, the only way to do that in JSOND is to fall back on RDF list and referencing the first list item and then building the rest of the list with basically a linked list. And one of the proposals was to use add value for that, but at that time we didn't have add craft. I'm hearing here.
Say that again.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, basically the use case is referencing lists or sets which are stored in a different resource in REST speaking. And I found something in RDF which I'm not sure if I really understood it correctly, but I think that's more or less the same. So I'll add that example to the issue tracker.
See, I'm looking at the link right now.
Of course, that's an RDF sequence, not a list.
No.
Well, I mean, it's just... I think the last time we discussed about that, some people said it would be impossible, or there doesn't exist anything comparable in RDF. That's why...
It's been sort of deprecated in RDF 1.1. I think they use a different term because people objected to the word deprecated, but it is not encouraged use and cannot be expressed in anything other than RDF XML. I take that back. There is a RDF translation, but there is no native syntactic sugar to be able to aid that in anything other than RDF XML.
Yeah. The RDF colon li is translated into RDF colon underscore 1, underscore 2, etc., which are the real properties used. And what we're talking about with list is the one following this section, 2.16.
Yeah, so it's still the list itself there. It's also an IRI, right?
No, the description there is a basket which has fruits, and the value of the fruit is the linked list, and that is anonymous in the example.
Yeah, that's what I'm not sure I really understood it. So what's the IRI for back? Is that something that doesn't exist, or could that be reused somehow, or is it like a better blank node, or?
Yeah. The value of the hashFruit property there is the blank node, which has two properties. The first property is RDF first, and the value of that is the link to the banana. And then you have the property RDF rest, which is another B node, and there you hook in the apple and link to another. So that's the construct of RDF lists.
But where is that example slash basket IRI then in the graph?
I'm sorry, which example?
The in 2.16, there's example.org slash basket.
Yeah.
And that has the property has fruit, and then there's the linked list, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the subject. The subject is basket. The property is hasFruit, and the value of that is a bNode. And then that bNode has two properties, RDFFirst and RDFNext. And the value of RDFFirst is the URI for banana. Next is has the value of a bNode, who then has a value of RDFFirst, which is apple, etc. And then the last one points to pair for first, and then next is RDF nil.
Okay, yeah, I don't think I misunderstood that slide.
Yeah, so I guess the overall, at least my overall feeling on in general references to lists is that lists are fairly complicated constructs in RDF. Unfortunately, they're fairly, very complicated constructs in RDF, and I think because of that, just about everyone ends up, except for the people that are experts, just about everybody else completely screws up how to kind of express and use them. Unless you have a very kind of straightforward, easy way of straightforward, easy syntax. So I think Turtle has a really great syntax for lists. I think that we haven't done that badly for JSON-LD, the at list mechanism.
RDFA has a good form for lists, and microdata,
yep,
at least in my version of it, has a way to be able to describe that properties take list values, and that is the form you use there. They've become much more mainstream, I think, and part of it is because Sparkle now has a means of being able to access list elements using property paths.
Yeah.
The main criticism before was there was no real way to be able to access list values through Sparkle.
Mm-hmm.
And the list model is just like in Lisp, and well, it's a linked list there, but
it's pretty basic computer science data structure.
Yeah, but I guess in all of those cases, you don't actually end up naming the list, right?
No,
it's always a bNode. Or it's
yes,
always bNode related. So I guess my point is that I don't think we should invent anything new where we specify, where you can name, you can name a list using an IRI. One, because the use case for that is not very clear to me, and then two, because nobody else has really done that, and that kind of tells me that there isn't a compelling use case for it.
N3 sort of allows you to do it by using equals, which is the same as owl, same as. So that does allow you to assign an IRI to the first bNode, but it's done through reasoning rather than through syntax, really.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think this is, I mean, this is something that perhaps JSON-LD could go to in the future, and I believe Marcus's argument was that because we're linked, a common thing you might want to link to is the actual representation of a list. So we might want to do that sometime, but my opinion, it's premature right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. If you want to represent the exact model of RDF lists, you should stick to how these are intended to be used and all the syntactic shorthand to use B nodes for them. If you want to link to a resource which carries a list and represent that in RDF, you can always use something like RDF value as a middle hand property to connect to the list. Or you can use the music ontology that introduced the ordered list? Well, some other kind of semantics for lists than RDF lists specifically.
Yeah, that's where I came across it.
Yeah.
And the same basically applies for sets as well. Because you can't link to a set either.
Well, I guess you technically can, link to a set, and that's just a regular, entity.
But there's an indirection in there.
Right. Yeah, there's all, I guess the point is that there's always an indirection in there, and we don't, at least I don't think that we should try and make it a more direct link at this point in time. Okay, so I guess the proposal then, I don't think that we have consensus on this, Marcus, that the group would want to solve this problem right now.
That's fine for me. I just still have problems how I would use that in a web API then. I mean, because it's used in basically every web API that you link from one resource to another resource which contains the list or a set. But I don't have any solution, so.
Okay.
I'd recommend that, those APIs probably implicitly intend for the resource containing that list to be a document, and one of its primary values is the list, its primary topic or its RDF value or whatever semantics you think applies. If you have to express it as really the RDF concept of a list, you can always use the triples to do that, but I'd recommend to reify the notion of the resource as being something that carries a list, not that intrinsically is a list.
Right.
Yeah, okay, that's one solution, yeah.
Okay, so the proposal is do not support the direct naming of lists using IRIs in this revision of JSON-LD. Does that capture it?
I think so.
Okay, I'm looking down the agenda. Let's see, we still need Greg here, plus one, minus one.
Oh, sorry.
No problem. Okay, so looking down the list for JSON syntax-related issues.
What about the number representation for doubles?
Yeah, let's do that one. Is it even listed as an issue, or was it listed in a discussion about another issue?
I think I created an issue.
Marcus, I didn't hear. What was that?
I think I created an issue.
Okay. Did you find it very quickly? I'm having a hard time finding.
Yeah, issue 81.
Issue 81.
Yes, right.
Okay. Ah, yes. Okay, so the topic is issue 81, round tripping issues due to lack of precision, lack of precision.
So if you look at my comment there, I think the most precision that is maintained by the N triples tests is the second one there, and I have to count the number of digits there are. It's like 16. Yeah, it is 16.
Yeah.
Percent 1.16E.
Okay. So the proposal would be to change the normalization, the C equivalent to 1.16E?
That would allow us to express natively the same information that can be done in Turtle, I guess.
And then I guess double, well, let's see, is that 64? Well, it doesn't.
But this would be for double.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's enough to do a 64-bit, full 64-bit number. Or 64-bit double, if that makes any sense. I'm looking at the minimum value for a 64-bit double precision IEEE 754 number. So, I mean, it doesn't. I mean, you know, so the minimum value for a 64-bit double precision number is 4.94 with a lot of other numbers to the times 10 to the negative 324th.
But if we look at XSD double, and I think this came from the XML schema description for XSD double.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're describing it as XSD double, then it should have the same lexical requirements and, you know, and pattern as XSD double.
Right.
And I'm looking for that.
That's what Wikipedia says.
Okay, so let's see. So we should be... So it should be 17.
Yeah, I don't think that won't be consistent with what was done for the other RDF tests, though.
Yeah.
And looking at the XML schema, they're not explicit on that, but that is from RDF tests 16.
I mean, 16 is fine with me. I don't really have a very strong opinion on this one way or the other.
Yeah, it also relates to round tripping, right?
Yeah.
So if we chose 17 and we round trip through something, which is a 16, then we would lose precision.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the proposal is convert all...
And of course, it is 17 digits with the integer part of that, right?
Right.
Yeah,
but I think they're
plus one.
Yeah, but I, well, yeah, 17 significant decimal. I didn't know if they meant digits of precision after the dot or not. It really, I mean, you know, if we find that this is not adequate, we can always change it. It's not like this is a big philosophical, you know, discussion. It's just how much precision should we have so that we don't lose, so we try and preserve as much information as possible when we round trip. Okay, so the proposal is to convert all XSD double values to strings using the C syntax formula of 1.16e. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, convert all XSD double values to strings using the C syntax formula of %1.16e when performing the conversion. Let's see. I guess this is convert all values coerced to XSD double. Convert all values coerced to XSD double to strings using the C syntax formula of 1.16e when performing the conversion. Well, just 1.16e. Okay, so there's the proposal.
What happens to integers? Not the same.
This is for double, not for integers.
Yeah, it's only for doubles.
What about the integers?
Integers are, well, it depends on what part you're talking about. But if you're talking about a data round tripping, there's no data round tripping issue with integers, because the integer either stays what it is, or if it's converted to a normalized form, it's converted into a string value of the number and then XSD integer, and then when you come back into JSON-LD, it's turned back into a native type or back into a coerced type based on the context. So I don't think it's an issue with integers. Did that make sense, Marcus?
I'm not sure. I would have to think a bit more about it.
Okay. Okay. So I think that's that issue.
I think when you get to limited precision, that's where usually int and short and byte come in.
Yeah.
And I have a library that does all of that.
Yeah, although I think most of the JSON, well, the JSON implementations don't go down the precision that small, right, with integers. I'm pretty sure that it's just none of the implementations actually take a byte or short or any of those things into account.
I mean,
you could if you did it, if you data typed it, but
it doesn't relate to native types.
I don't know if you were agreeing or disagreeing, Greg.
I'm agreeing that we don't take that into consideration because we're only talking about native type representation.
Yeah. Okay. I think I'm trying to see if there are any other syntax issues. So references to lists, the initial context in the API spec is something in the API spec. I don't really know if we need to talk about that as a part of the syntax. IRI normalization. Oh, crap, we do need to talk about these, don't we? Okay, so issue 86 IRI normalization is in, well, let's see, is that, yeah, it's the next one. So the next one up is issue 86, RRI normalization. It's a link to it. And the question is, whether or not we should, the library, the JSON LD library, should do any sort of IRI normalization.
I'm trying to think. Does RDFA, does it have IRI normalization tests in it? I think there's one of those that was bothering me. But I don't think that Turtle does IRI normalization.
Yeah.
Well, but Turtle has no API, does it?
No.
So it's the triple store who does the IRI normalization there.
I don't. My triple store does not do IRI normalization.
It would be the triple store's job to do that, not Turtle's job.
And I guess the argument is maybe it's not even the triple store's job to do it. It's probably the application's job to do it.
Or the application.
Well,
depends the, how you use it.
Triple parsers resolve IRIs against the explicit or implicit base.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that they normalize it, right? Because when you resolve against base, you're not necessarily normalizing. Normalizing means that, you know, you remove stuff like dot, dot, slash out of the path information.
I think they do.
Well, I know that RDFA processors don't, right?
Yeah.
I don't think any of the processors do. If they did, then you wouldn't be able, you would lose fidelity by when going between different representations. Because having an IRI with or without a trailing slash or with its trailing slash dot dot would, or dot for that matter, are there different resources in pretty much every other RDF dialect. So if we were to say these things must be normalized, we would lose fidelity if we're representing same information.
You always have to have full IRIs in RDF.
But not normalized.
No.
So if I say example.com slash and example.com slash dot, those are two different IRIs, even though they normalized to the same IRI.
Yeah, if they contain that, but if the reference starts with a leading dot slash or a leading dot dot slash, those are resolved, right?
Everything is resolved.
Yeah.
So if it starts with a dot slash, then it was applied to example.com slash foo, then it would be example.com dot slash. Right, because that's the foo portion is removed when you apply the relative IRI.
I don't think that dot slash would be kept though during resolution.
Well, I guess my proposal is that we resolve this issue by doing an investigation of the behavior of other RDF processors.
Yeah.
In the case of my RDF processor, I'm pretty certain that it would not be normalized in any of those circumstances.
Say that again, Marcus.
It's a bit different in those circumstances, I would say, because we rely on the full IRI for a number of, we can get URI collisions at some places, and if we don't normalize them, if we don't fold them together, we have two different values for one thing.
I don't think it's any different than RDFA, for instance. RDFA, for instance, a term. If you have a term defined, then it expands as a term. If you wanted it to be relative, then you would need to use a dot slash, in which case the resulting IRI would contain the dot slash in it. So I don't see that JSON-LD is really any different than, say, RDFA is.
Yeah, I think fundamentally I'm concerned about the loss of fidelity in the data. I think we do need to say what happens if they put dot slash, but I think that what we say is, well, it's preserved. You're basically appending to whatever the base of the document is. If that makes sense.
We should just check.
Oh, you know what? We're being dropped, aren't we? I'm just heads up. It's 2 hours. We're going to be dropped off the telecom bridge. Call back in so the call can keep going.
Okay.
I'm back.
There we go. Okay. And we'll just wait on Nicholas, and Marcus and I are going to be dropped very shortly.
If you got to find that setting and you're...
Well, the reason we had it on there is because we had people connected for like 2 or 3 weeks at a time. Maybe
yeah, but I bet if you change it to 3 hours, the chances of ever having a conference going 3 hours seem pretty limited.
Yeah, one would hope anyway. Anyway, I need to go shortly, but we should get rid of all of the syntax issues if we can. I guess what I was saying is that we, at least to me, it seems like doing IRI normalization is opening up a can of worms that we don't necessarily want to open, right? So I think it really should be up to the application layer to normalize if it needs to. And that includes for things like dot slash. I think the IRI that's generated for that, we shouldn't try and second guess what the author means by that, right? If they really intend to have a base URL that's, if the base URL is example.com and they use dot slash as one of their IRIs, we shouldn't assume that they want the base IRI to be example.com/, right? We should just give them back example.com/ and then dot slash and then allow them to do what they want with it. Because there are other libraries, that do IRI normalization, and IRI normalization is not necessarily a very simple thing to do. So the other concern I have is that all of a sudden, your implementations now need to do IRI normalization, and that's, if your language doesn't have an IRI normalization library, it becomes a very difficult thing to implement JSON-LD processor at that point.
If in a full IRI, for example, two dots are allowed?
Yes. That's how you get to a parent. So, yes, if I had example.com/foo/... then it would be normalized to example.com with a trailing slash. So,
yeah, but is it a valid IRI if you have those two dots in it, or is it an invalid one? I don't know.
Yes, it's valid. I'd have to find the reference for you, but it is valid.
No, it is valid.
The three dots. I suppose it would be valid, but it wouldn't do anything during normalization.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing is that I don't think that we should be checking. I don't think that the JSON-LD processor needs to go as far as it starts to check the validity of the IRIs that it's generating. Right. I mean, at that point, you get into what the author intended, and that becomes very difficult. You start making arbitrary decisions at that point.
Well, one thing we haven't talked about is escapes. Escapes allowing or expanding UTF escape sequences within strings or IRIs. I'd rather not go there, but that is something that is done specifically within, say, Turtle. And then there's also percent escape sequences, which are explicitly not expanded.
Yeah, I think RDFA did it the right way in that you just use what the author gave you, basically. I think that's still true. I know it used to be true, but I don't think that we should try and transform the data in any way. I think we should just use what the author gave us and then allow them to figure out whether they want to normalize it or de-percent encode it or convert the UTF to, entities.
It does mean, though, that if we have UTF escapes in there, there's a round-tripping issue. There's a UTF-8 escape in either strings or IRIs, and you go through normalization, the N triples might result in those being replaced with their UTF equivalents, so that when you get the IRI back, it now would be the actual UTF character rather than an escaped version of it.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess we'd have the same issue if we did modify the IRI. We'd still have a round-tripping issue with another language that didn't replace
security
either way.
Not go there. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Okay, so the proposal then is to IRIs are not – sorry, go ahead, Nicholas.
Yeah, I just typed out an example in IRC. I believe that both in Turtle and RDFA, if you have a base, explicit or implicit relative IRIs are resolved. So are we clear on that? I mean, given a base of example.org/foo, given /bar or ../bar, as relative references, you always end up with example.org/bar. But there is no normalization within the full IRIs. So given example.org/foo/../bar, you get the same result.
I don't think there's an RDFA test for the – I mean, certainly the slash is sort of the normal IRI arithmetic. ../, I don't know that we have a test case in RDFA that checks for that.
Yeah.
We have in number 114 does.
Really?
I had a link up there. I can paste it again here.
114, which is an XHTML.
Yeah, we do normalization there, don't we?
Well, the resolution we do. We don't resolve full IRIs, but we resolve relative IRIs. I think there's a difference there.
Oh, yeah, 114.
Yeah.
And I agree that we shouldn't resolve full IRIs because they are opaque or... How do you
opaque.
Pronounce that?
Yeah.
Opaque. Thank you. So you can't really know if the full IRI foo slash dot dot slash bar was intended to be normalized, to be resolved or not. But relative IRIs, the leading portion of an IRI is very important. I mean, you have also double slash as a leading, which means use the same protocol.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember why we made that decision in RDFA. I don't think we had as deep of a conversation as what we're having now.
I think that the relative IRI resolution is common in RDF, but it's everything is limited to that. There is no normalization. When you have a full IRI, you don't do anything to that. But,
it could be that this is just the behavior of the common libraries that we're all using for doing IRI resolution.
Well, I now remember I had to write specific code for this in the C library. I did basically write everything.
I don't think we have normative text about it, do we?
I don't think so, no.
But I think if you form an absolute IRI by appending a relative path to an IRI, you have to do that, what Nicholas just said. Otherwise, you will end up in an invalid IRI.
No, it's a valid IRI, but
it's a different IRI.
Well, so it would seem that in the case of RDFA, there is a certain amount of normalization that goes on. Now, my guess is if you appended something that had a dot dot in the middle of the relative portion, that it would not be expanded. But I'd need to look at that further to determine at least what my implementations do. And we should see what happens with RDF XML and Turtle as well.
Maybe normalization is the wrong term. It's more forming an absolute IRI out of a base and a relative IRI.
Yeah, it's
I think it's
the arithmetic, exactly. And I'm pretty sure that we are conforming to what the relevant RFC is in this case, and that's exactly what JSON-LD should do.
Yeah.
Well, wait, say that again, Greg.
Well, I think that the behavior that we're seeing in RDFA with regards to appending a relative IRI to a base IRI comes directly out of RFC, whatever the number is for IRIs, and that JSON-LD should conform to the requirements of that, as evidenced by what RDFA does. I think it would, before resolving this, I'd like to look a little further to see exactly what the behavior of RDF XML and Turtle is when also given relative IRIs.
Yeah. Okay, so let's do that. Because I really wouldn't be that. I wouldn't be against resolving relative IRIs against base if they have, you know, dots or dot dot slash or any of that stuff. What I would be against is running the entire IRI normalization algorithm, which is fantastically complicated. Okay, so let's, I guess what we're doing is we're putting this on hold until we get more information.
Yeah, found it RFC, and there they do that remove dots part for the reference resolution, as they call it. I just posted it into RFC.
Right.
Okay, that might be the discussion we had in the RDFA working group.
Yeah.
So if you scroll down, there is a pseudo-algorithm. And if you scroll a bit further down, 5.2.4, that's actually remove dot segments.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we really need to do.
Yeah, the question is, does this also happen if it's in the middle of an IRI? Or just at the beginning?
No, that's,
in,
I think the when you form an absolute IRI out of a relative one.
Well, they have an algorithm for removing dot segments, but the question is, when is that algorithm applied?
Yeah, so I would say, Greg, it's more than likely applied to the relative IRI that you have. So if you have something in the middle, then you run this algorithm against it. But we still need to read more.
Transform. For each IRI reference, the following pseudocode describes it. So 5.2.2. So, yeah, this looks like 5.2.2 applies to how we must handle relative IRIs, and that
right.
That's exactly what we should do. It'll be useful having some test cases that verify that, not just in the case where it is the prefix of the relative IRI, but also potentially within the body.
Right.
Yeah, it might be. In Java, the URI class behaves as I just pasted. It resolves full IRIs with dot segments as well.
Yeah. Okay.
But
well,
it does,
I'm sure that's what mine does as well.
It doesn't normalize like anything. As you see, it keeps the uppercase TP and the double slash before bar and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm trying to look through to see if there's so I guess what we're doing is we're going to postpone this until we have some time to read through the specs and figure out exactly what's going on.
I think the only thing that we would put perhaps in there as a progress is that we intend to conform to the requirements of RFC 3986, Section 5.
RFC 3986,
Section 5, yeah.
Section 5, when processing IRIs, when, I guess, yeah, processing IRIs. But what, let's see, Section... Okay, so reference resolution. Section 5, reference resolution when processing IRIs. Okay, so there's proposal in RC, which I think I'd be fine with.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should check that the common programming languages have tools in their libraries, standard libraries for this. I believe they all.
I think they must. If anyone that is currently implementing RDF, this must be resolved the same way across the different serializations. I think everything references 3986. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's resolved. Trying to see if there's, looking down, references to lists, remove initial context from the API. So the initial context doesn't have anything to do with the IRI normalization we just discussed. IRI conflicts when compacting and expanding, we're almost done with that issue, and I don't think it has anything to do with the syntax. Specifying the active context for compaction is an API issue. So I believe we've dealt with all of the syntax issues.
Is issue 84... Sorry.
Say that again?
Is issue 84 support for control probing of unlinked objects? That's not syntax, right?
Looking.
I don't know what's entailed.
Yeah, I don't believe it's syntax because it's you're basically describing how the conversion to RDF happens. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's an algorithm that's specified in the RDF API. RDF, JSON-LD API.
Well, it has some impact, well, I guess for expansion and compaction, but...
Yeah, again...
Yeah, for expansion.
So I guess the core here is that we are not talking about changing the syntax in any way or adding or removing keywords in the syntax.
No, it's for interpreting this as RDF, correct?
Yeah. Yep. I guess the set inverse of references that would be a syntax change. I'm looking at the example at the bottom.
Yeah, that's the inverse of is an example of some application specific interpretation. The inverse of means nothing here. As JSON-LD, it's just how I ended up with this, so it's not intended to be interpreted by anything.
Okay.
Well, I would like to suggest an extension with the keyword being at rev or immersive, but I think that's a harder sell than supporting this.
Right.
It might be interesting for framing.
I think I could have made use of it in the RDFA manifest JSON-LD representation, which I don't know if you've looked at that, Nicholas, if you had some feedback on it, because there's some clever things in there.
I haven't had time to look at it deeply, but
It's mainly the use of arbitrary URIs as properties to create some linkage that is useful.
Oh, right. Now I remember. I thought about that.
I'm not entirely happy with it, but I haven't come up with a better way at this point.
No. Well, I'll take a look at it. Now that you mention it, I remember thinking, when I saw it.
Yeah.
I think I understood what you meant there, but I agree. I'll try to grasp it and see if I can come up with a good feedback.
Right. I think at any level, I don't think that I certainly am not up to speed enough on this issue to discuss it today.
No, we're 20 minutes past the 2-hour deadline.
Okay. Well, I think that we're pretty close. Well, at least, again, we're pretty close on the syntax stuff. I don't think that there are any major changes that we're looking at right now.
So I'm planning on getting back in the syntax and probably API documents this week now that I'm freed up. So, and Marcus, I really appreciate what you've done.
Yeah, same here, Marcus.
Yeah.
Thanks for updating the specs.
I agree.
So I guess then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and ping the RDF working group and say that we think that the syntax document is going to be ready within another month. And I'm just saying a month to give us plenty of space to clean up any other remaining issues. But after that, we'll probably start talking about transferring the JSON-LD syntax specification over to that group. And then we can kind of work in parallel on the API if we want to. But I have a feeling that most of our time is going to be spent explaining JSON-LD to the RDF working group and trying to get it through that process. Any questions before we break? We'll meet again next week for our regular call.
Could you send those reviews you talked about last week to the mailing list?
Yes. I need to talk to those companies and make sure that they're okay with putting a public review in. I'll try and get around to that, doing that soon. Okay. Anything else? All right, guys. Thanks so much for the call and for spending so much time on this. Appreciate it. And we will talk again next week.
Okay.
Thank you, too.
Take care. Bye.
You, too. Bye.